Well, thank you to Ulrich and Fringe and the other organizers and moderators for the space today, and good to meet all the speakers here. Look forward to getting to know you. My name is Reed, and I'm here with my father, Marshall. And we and our family has been, excuse me, involved in this, since the beginning of my life, and much earlier for Marshall and his life. We have been the serendipitous, or however you might call it, recipients of a set of communications from an off-planet group of observers who call themselves the Allies of Humanity. And this group made contact with Marshall in the late 90s and have been in touch with him since then. And basically their stated purpose was to observe the extraterrestrial intervention into our world by a group of competing economic collectives, multiracial collectives, who are involved in the world today due to what humanity is doing to the planet and what we are doing to ourselves, and how we are affecting the value of both planet, resource, and human species. And so we have been stewarding this perspective that they have offered and have been further investigating it, verifying it, exploring how this phenomenon of species-to-species interaction and intervention might be playing out on the world stage, and how it is affecting average people, contactees most certainly, and abductees most specifically. So it's been a difficult reality to hold in our awareness, but we have done so for many decades. I've been working with Marshall on holding these perspectives for almost 20 years now. And we've gone all around the world to share this with people and to hear from people, especially in areas of formerly colonized peoples who have experienced interventions in their histories and in their native traditions and societies. So we've been able to kind of corroborate the experience we might be having as a world against the experiences we have already had as human beings interacting with other intelligences, in this case, other human intelligences. So myself, I write and speak on this issue. I am constantly learning and seeing what the data and the evidential record can tell me, and what the observed record of non-human intelligence activity, interaction, and involvement in the world can further illuminate for me as I look at this phenomenon in its evolving nature. And as I'll get into whenever I end up speaking more, I really feel like we need a structured framework to move through this phenomenon in a cognitive way, in a way that moves us from uncertainty to certainty, from possibilities to probabilities, toward making strong, grounded, evidential assessments of the visitation that empower our human response in stages, not all at once. So I'm very excited to be here, and thank you so much.
I was wondering if you could give us a little overview. I think you're doing some classes at the Paradigm Institute. Is that correct?
Yes, I just delivered a four-week course through their academic program on extraterrestrial studies. And my focus, following up on Richard Dolan, who gave two really good courses on basically the history of the phenomenon and the alien agendas, I followed up on that by a course on decoding alien intent and introduced a whole framework and pathway of inquiry that could be used to analyze intent, motive, and involvement by non-human intelligence and structure that analysis in ways that give us ready access to methods of responding to this. Because in my view, we're very late in responding to this. You know, when you interact with another entity, and if that entity is involving themselves or intervening with you very directly, it's critical that you respond in a stepwise fashion and not sit on your hands for 80 years and then attempt one grand, you know, home run hit at the very end of it all. And so we're very late in responding to this contact event, which is over 100 years old now. And so my hope in that course was to offer a structured analytic pathway that can bring us to incremental levels of greater certainty regarding what's happening and the ability to respond, knowing that we're responding based on incomplete, possibly inaccurate, and possibly even deceptive information. I mean, this is the intel world. Intelligence is when you engage with another entity that seeks either to evade or to not be seen or to not disclose and to conduct activity in a covert fashion. That's what intelligence gathering and intel work is. And we need intelligence. We need to approach it in this way because this is a non-mechanistic phenomenon. I think the scientific method, though it is the gold standard and I respect it highly, this is an understanding framework, not a response framework. And so we're engaging not the wrong frameworks, but we're leaning on understanding frameworks excessively, and we're not engaging in a response framework, and therefore we're not responding. So yes, but back to the question, I have offered that course through New Paradigm, and I'll be offering that course again in a public way, accessible to all. So yeah, look forward to bringing this out.
Marshall, welcome to the space. Would you mind giving us a little bit of an introduction on yourself?
Well, I'm in an interesting position of being a part of this whole phenomenon in a unique way. And it wasn't something I ever planned to become a part of, but I was drawn into it through my spiritual work. I teach the way of knowledge, actually a greater community way of knowledge, which is something that includes wisdom from the universe that has been made available to me through a sacred manner. And I also have received incrementally messages from a group called the Allies of Humanity, which have given, I think, me a working framework to comprehend the things that we cannot see here on Earth, because we may become intimately aware of events happening both currently and historically here, but we have no notion of what's going on beyond our borders. And what's going on beyond our borders is determining the nature of this alien presence, its purpose, what it serves, and how we must regard it. So we only have half the picture to work with, which is why we be constantly being focused on the government, our problems with the government disclosure, when really it's extraterrestrial NHI disclosure that's the most important thing. And since they don't disclose, there must be a way for someone to disclose things to us that we could not see ourselves. And this is part of my contribution, and I'm very pleased to be here with you all and look forward to hearing your perspectives and experience. The abductee experience, I'm not an abductee, but many of my students over the time in learning creative community knowledge and wisdom have been abductees or currently or so. So I've also met with researchers in this as well. So I think this holds one of the keys to understanding the alien presence and agenda in our world, which has not been revealed and must be discerned through other means. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. Reed, you know, I have a question for you. I want to maybe see if I can start this off with a question. You have said that there are three fundamental questions we need to answer about non-human intelligence. And I'm curious, what are those three fundamental questions? And if you could please elaborate.
Sure. Yeah, I think these three questions are top of the order for ufology, and I think they are answerable at this point. The first question is, are we dealing with a physical alien visitor? Those three words, are they physical, are they alien, and are they a visitor? And I think there's urgency and consequence if the answer to that question is yes, and there are reasons for that we can get into. The second question, is there a detrimental or adversarial NHI in the world? One or more, could only be one. But if there's one detrimental and many more beneficial or neutral, it's non-equivalent. The detrimental must be faced, contended with, and dealt with on a different timeline and to a different degree than potential beneficial entities, who we also may not or must not assume will help us deal with that detrimental. So is there an adversarial or detrimental NHI? And then last, if so, is that entity or force directly intervening in human affairs? Are they affecting our human world directly? Because if so, the non-equivalence becomes even more significant, and the urgency and consequence become even more significant. You know, I share a risk equation out of the business and intelligence world often. See if I can pull that up somewhere. But, you know, risk equals vulnerability. I'm sorry, risk equals threat times vulnerability times intent. And so our vulnerability as a species is extraordinarily high. to any form of detrimental visitation with the intent to intervene. There are so many flashpoints, points of entry, weaknesses in the human system that can be exploited and compromised. And so if there is a detrimental actor in our space, we absolutely must recognize that and respond to that in a timely way. And we cannot give them 100 years to operate freely and in an unmonitored, unsanctioned way in our world, engaging in non-consensual contact with individuals, taking people against their will, subjecting them to what can only be described, according to current norms and our rules-based systems, as crimes against humanity. And so if this is occurring, I think this demands a massive degree or amount of attention and focus. And I worry, as disclosure rolls out, that even as it might be a stepwise disclosure, you know, to acclimate people to this presence more broadly and not to spook them or scare them regarding a detrimental actor, in the end, that is the disclosure that must be shared with people. And there are many reasons why I think that must ultimately be shared with people and not kept secret, as it has been kept secret. So those are the three questions. And I feel we're in a position with the 80-plus year evidential record, all the analysis of UFO, UAP activity, all the research that's been done, we can begin to answer those three questions with a high degree of confidence.
Marshall, what is your take on this from your point of view and from what you've experienced?
Well, I think we're at a threshold point in our evolution and history that has great threat, but also great possibilities and great need. And I'd like to, in my time, talk about the threat aspect of it, but also the opportunity aspect. And I'll say right up front that the only thing that's going to unite humanity and end our ceaseless endeavor in war and conflict, and now competition for diminishing resources in the world, which will escalate war beyond anything we've ever seen potentially, is that we're all facing intervention from beyond. We're all the natives of this world facing intervention. This intervention is working behind the scenes without the use of force, and there's reasons for that, which I'll talk about when my time comes. And that will force us to look outward into the universe instead of at each other so critically. And no nation in the world is going to thrive in the face of global intervention. No leader is going to be powerful in the face of global intervention. In fact, it will alter the character and nature of our existence so thoroughly that it's almost inconceivable. So everyone stands to lose in the face of this intervention. And therefore, once it becomes recognized sufficiently, hopefully, in its real scope, the dimensions of it, which I think we may never uncover all of that, but some of it can be uncovered and must be uncovered, then we have a whole different narrative of how to relate to each other and how we're going to join forces and resources and skills to deal with this event that's affecting the entire world. I have a contribution to make here. I don't have the answer to everything. But I have information that I think is critical to our understanding the nature of this intervention, how it functions, how it's organized, and its ultimate goals. And I also have been writing about spirituality in the universe for many decades, which I think can give us much strength and hope that there are forces in the universe that are very advanced spiritually. But these are not forces that engage in intervening in other worlds' affairs or trying to alter other worlds' dimensions or societies. So the wise remain hidden in the universe as the false proclaim themselves. So as is so true within our world, yes? So there's much to learn about the universe itself. It's a non-human universe. It doesn't operate according to our ethics or standards, but it may well operate according to what we know to be the laws of nature. That seems to be more universal and should be considered in evaluating alien capacities and abilities and intent. So we know from our own history and nature that there is a competition for dominance in the world. It's been going on since the beginning of life in the universe, life in our world, life probably life in the universe. And there's a different way to look at this as a natural history platform, and then as evidential from our own history as we've seen, how the world has been reshaped by intervening forces from Europe and the New World. We have much to learn from that. This may be different, but in order for this alien presence to present itself as beneficial, it would have to do so in a completely convincing manner, which it's not doing. In fact, it's demonstrating just the opposite, which is why we're all gathered here. And this is a big problem, probably the biggest problem we've ever faced. I think it is the biggest problem we've ever faced. And this is the biggest event in human history. But, you know, to become a free nation in the universe, you're going to have to deal with an adversarial forces. You don't just have it. You're going to have to earn it. You're going to have to establish yourself as a race to be dealt with, establish your own parameters of your arena. In this case, our solar system would be our arena. And we're going to have to be very, very wise about who comes here and what we allow them to do. And we must have this as a worldwide approach. There won't be a worldwide approach yet, but it has to start somewhere. So if we're going to ever have a chance of becoming a free and self-determined people in the universe, we're going to have to grow up, stop fighting with each other, and begin to learn about this greater reality in which we've lived forever. It is now at our doorstep, looking into our windows, taking people against their will. This is really our greatest moment and our great turning point in life, rather than just being a problem that we have to deal with.
Hi, Marshall. This is Courtney. And while I'm not familiar with your work, I've been familiarizing myself with some of your key talking points. So I'm hoping that I can read one of them for the audience and then ask something from the what can be done category. So one of the things that stood out to me was these entities are fundamentally physical, even though their psychic abilities and technological capabilities may impress upon us a belief that they represent a non-corporeal or interdimensional force. So from the what can be done category of the talking points, one of the things that's standing out to me that I think the audience would really like to hear your perspective on is your comment of protecting your mind and perception from influence, manipulation, and control. So those two things seem to be correlated to me. Maybe they're not, or maybe that was unintentional. But can you tell us a little bit about the what can be done category and what you see as the protection of one's mind and perception from influence, manipulation, and control?
That's great. Thank you for that question. Excellent question, because the real competition is going to happen in the mental environment, not the physical environment. His presence is here because they live in an arena of space where war has been suppressed or eliminated largely. But the competition in influence has become the dominant way that nations compete with each other and how they seek dominance wherever they can. I think the Allies of Humanity briefings have given us a background for this that I've never seen anywhere else. And it really begins to give a lot of clarity about this, but I'll talk about that later. So the mental environment is the environment in which we influence each other through thought and demonstration. I mean, it is ultimately the most powerful environment. It's a psychic environment, but it's also an environment that other races can be very strong in and very determined in. Human beings are not very organized and determined in this environment, even though we have great possibilities. Those forces who are in the world today operate fundamentally in this arena of thought and influence. They're very powerful in that regard. So there's two ways to deal with dealing with this influence. The most fundamental thing is that we possess two minds within us. We have our worldly mind, which has been shaped and conditioned through all of our experiences in life and the decisions we've made around those experiences, our reactions to the world. And we live in that world of our mental, that's our personal environment, mental environment. But within us is what I call knowledge, which is deeper internal intelligence that is not worldly, that has not been shaped and dominated by our previous experience, by our trauma, our tragedy, our interests, our obsessions, or any of those things. And knowledge is the part that will protect us from intervention. So the more we become strong with knowledge or begin to take the steps to gaining access to knowledge, which is one of the main things I teach in my work, the more immune you become to any kind of influence in the mental environment, whether it be human or extraterrestrial or psychic or anything. The mental environment is the environment that you don't control, but you can create security within it, and you can create boundaries within it for yourself, but you have to have your anchor in a deeper place within you. You can't just have ardent beliefs or do ardent things to be able to secure yourself in this environment. And this is why the knowledge that lives within all of us, waiting to be discovered, is really, it's like the iceberg below the waterline. And it's invisible, but it has the mass of the iceberg. And the mass of who we are is not our surface personality or our surface worldly experience, but a deeper well within us that we've carried with us the whole way. In fact, it is our origin, our deeper reality, and our destiny. When we leave this world, we come back into that intelligence more fully, without distractions. So teaching the way of knowledge, I think, is pivotal to being able to gain immunity from the forces in the mental environment. But there's also skills you can do to protect your mind. You can create a shield, a mental shield around your mind. You have to create it like a force field. If an entity is trying to penetrate your intelligence, and I've had this happen to me many times, particularly around the publication of the Allies of Kennedy briefings. It was great attempts to interfere with me and gain access to my mind. So I had learned already how to protect and shield my mind, and there are many techniques for that. I don't have all of them, of course, but what I've used has been effective, and that is in the moment something you could do to protect yourself. What you could do to protect yourself from mental persuasion has to do more with the deeper intelligence within you, which you fall back into, and that has immunity from anything in the world or even extraterrestrial. So it's not being influenced by any of these things. So the more you have a relationship with knowledge between your worldly mind and the deeper knowledge within you, the more you're able to handle and protect yourself against inappropriate mental invasions. And basically the intervention, that is their game plan, is to turn people against their leaders, the norms of society, in some cases against each other. It will form that regional war in the worlds in order, led by xenophobic leaders, to destabilize the powerful nations. It will operate on a large scale and on an individual scale. This is how they capture the minds of abductees, or some abductees. This is how they engage them in their own human representatives, and obviously, ultimately, it's going to be the basis for how they think they're going to replace humanity over a long period of time. So, control of the mental environment is really important. I know a lot of you are probably very sensitive to environmental factors. Many people who are first responders are sensitive. Being sensitive is a gift, but it's also a hazard if you don't know how to use it and protect it. So my work is really, in terms of what to do, a large part of it is how to protect yourself, because you have to start there. But then how do you protect the planet? How do you educate the planet? How do you educate the planet about universal reality, our local universe? I'm not talking about the entire universe. Our local universe is the thing we need to understand. And who can ever teach us about that? So I can only teach you about that because of what has been shown through me, both through an angelic source and through the Allies of Humanity briefings, which I've been with for a very long time. So this is part of the self-protection we need to develop within ourselves. If we're just belief-based, if we're just emotional, well, we're fair game. We can be reached, we can be influenced, we can be disturbed, we can either be taken over. So there has to be a deeper connection within us that we can build over time. This is what I call taking the steps to knowledge. And also understand the power of the mental environment. This is how the intervention is working fundamentally in the world. And it's influencing people in positions of power. It's influencing citizens. It takes people against their will for various purposes, interbreeding being one of them, probably the most consequential in the long run. And either to disable you from ever recognizing it and opposing it, or to become its advocate and its supporter, and ultimately, for some people, to become its advocates and representatives. So we're being eroded from the inside out. So our spiritual nature here has a big part to play in equipping us and preparing us, not only to deal with intervention, but also how are we going to remain a free and dominant race in the universe in the future, if that can be achieved.
Yeah, I think, you know, what Marshall's really getting at here is we are interfacing with another entity with more advanced capabilities than our own psychically. And that psychic influence, whether it's targeted at whole populations or at certain individuals, or even if it's ambient in the sense of we're essentially in the room with an extraterrestrial intelligence, many orders more powerful than our own. And so what Marshall's getting at is, in light of this interface between NHI and HI, we need to strengthen our whole human system. And so it's not just about, you know, some tips or tricks for psychic shielding, which are important, and Marshall and I do teach those. But it's also, you know, what we might call the pillars of life: one's health, the stability of one's family, work, emotional well-being, and self-management. I mean, believe it or not, though it sounds maybe a little bit soft in comparison to the topics at hand, strengthening our whole human vehicle is going to be critical. And though, you know, I often hear in the UFO community, especially among those who are aware of a detrimental presence and the abduction phenomenon, possibly a hybridization phenomenon, a kind of hands in the air, why try? You know, we're small actors in a big space with powerful entities on stage, governments, militaries, you know, deep state realities, extraterrestrial forces. How do I matter? What can I even do? And to get to the question about what can we do, I think we need to reframe how we're seeing this interface. We so often see it as major forces lining up against each other, you know, militaries, U.S. government, Russian, Chinese government, and massive alien collectives with huge capabilities. Really, the NHI are demonstrating where the true front lines exist. It's at the level of the consciousness of an individual human being. That is where they are going. That is who they are taking. That is who they are conditioning. That is who they are grooming or attempting to groom. That is the true front lines. And so instead of re-empowering the human actors, the architects of secrecy, accidentally, you know, who also possess all the hard evidence, by the way. And so, again, ufology is unknowingly and accidentally re-empowering the very actors who have kept this in its current Cold War state for over 80 years, when really the front lines are you and me. And so our spirituality, our spiritual awareness, our proximity in consciousness to a part of the mind, whatever you'd like to call it, that is fundamentally transcendent and beyond this one physical life. Be proximal to that, you cannot be influenced. Be proximal to that, the force of your divinity will express itself through your thinking and emotions, and it will produce a countering force to any force that seeks to intrude on one's psyche or consciousness. So, you know, that's the true front lines as I see it, and that's why, you know, I know Marshall has spent much of his life teaching people how to strengthen their overall platform as an entity, because that's what this is. This is entity on entity, force on force, and we are. If we are not the human beings who are being contacted, then who else is? If not those of us who are aware of the event, who have been touched already intimately by it, you know, as Eric was speaking to very eloquently. And so I think it really merits our concentration on each of us and ourselves, and strengthening our ability to be a stronger life form so that we can contend with other life forms. I don't know if this is the right moment. Has everyone introduced themselves who's needed to?
Yeah. We have not heard from Patricia Summers yet.
Okay. I think she'll be okay if I throw this in now then. I respect the fact that human beings, especially those who have been involved in programs related to NHI technologies and crash recoveries, are reportedly having contact experiences. And it's two of them have been shared already today. Recently, you know, Michael Masters repeated with Ross, you know, the story of interacting with an entity via a lamppost, being brought onto a balcony and having an abductee or contactee facilitate an NHI interaction, or as he called it, an intervention. And I'm sorry, folks, I just have to call this out now. And maybe this is where the space goes off the rails, as the host said they wanted it to. But we are committing some form of either logical betrayal or emotional betrayal in saying just because I received a communication, it must be true, accurate, authentic, honest. It's almost like we're receiving the first ever delivery of mail. A truck drives up the road. Never seen a truck before, let alone a mail truck. And it dumps a bunch of letters on our doorstep. And we're like, oh my God, this must be a message from God, the universe, our brothers, our godfathers and godmothers. And really what it contains are a series of offers, threats, junk mail, etc. There is so little appetite in the UFO community to verify, authenticate the communications being received. And it seems to be that simply to receive it is the verification of that message's authenticity. And I really worry about this. And again, I'm not judging anyone's reported communication experience. My father's had one himself, right? And so, but this is a greater level of caution and analysis needs to be put upon such communications, and they cannot be treated as de facto truth, in my opinion.
About their experiences, and we do it every day. So, you know, first off, you don't understand experiencers, and I think you should hang out in places where people are talking about things that you absolutely 100% disagree with, and stay there. Stay there for a while and listen. And you might have a different starting point. Not that your ending point is going to change, and I'm not here to try to convince you of anything other than being more open to what experiencers are actually saying rather than telling us what we're saying, because we're in this room right now, and I bet if we had a good show of hands, a lot of us would say, yeah, you're wrong, Reed. Sorry.
Yeah, and Anjali, what I was saying was not actually referring to what you had just said. Before you joined the space, I believe the statement was made, the universe is waiting to welcome us. Steve shared the message that was given to him. If you do not speed up or allow the awakening, we will. I'm not saying that contactees themselves are not having a full suite of qualms and difficulties. Steve spoke to it. Look at the effect on his life. I'm thinking of others who have shared the effect on their life. I'm thinking more about how the UFO community, which is not the contactee community, is taking in these communications and making an automatic association with them as a fulfillment of ancient aliens theories. You know, if we saw a UFO in a Da Vinci piece of art, we see one in the sky, it's got to be the same entity here for the same reason, the whole biblical thing. And so these rather dangerous assumptions are being grandfathered forward year after year at every conference that the UFO community seems to host, and not enough scrutiny and logical integrity is being applied to consider how to verify these. Should we automatically believe them to be accurate and true? Also, there is a detrimental NHI actor in the world, I believe. They have demonstrated the ability to neurologically command what people experience. They are highly telepathic. And so, there is a rush to CE5. There is a rush to open arm engagement with the universe and forget the U.S. government, forget the gatekeepers, bag them. Humanity needs its contact moment, and we're going to get it. And my goodness.
Well, we are going to get it.
We are getting it. Slowly over time.
That's why we need to be talking about it. And I don't think that experience is the one source of everything that exists. And those are the beings that I hear from. So,
And that's fine, Courtney. I'm not, in no way passing judgment on the beings or the interaction or the communications you've received. I don't know what those are. How could I ever pass judgment on that? What I'm calling out is that there is a broad rush to make contact. There are numerous people teaching and training people how to open up their psychic channels to entities who they are not able to verify the presence of, the intention of, and we have a bad actor in our space already. I would question, why should we be opening up our minds actively or teaching broad swaths of the population to do so? And so there are these trends in ufology. And beyond it, Marshall's here. He can speak to his experience, how he verified it, how many years it took to verify it, how much tremendous spiritual work he did before these entities even reached out to him. and all the proofs that he applied to their communication, which were many. And
may I ask, yes, who is the bad actor that we have currently in this space?
Well, I don't mean in this Twitter space. I mean in the world.
Okay.
Right.
I'm just making sure. I'm like, oh, what are we got going on?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some folks listening in who might be, you might consider that, but because, of course, this community is constantly monitored, as you all know. But, you know, we have a telepathic aggressor. And so why are people opening up their telepathy? Carte blanche, wide open, with hopeful expectations about the universe providing at our hour of need, or fulfilling biblical or other religious prophecies, or addressing our climate catastrophe. There are, you know, I'll share in the chat here, there are so many red flags I have detected in a number of purported alien communications, which suggest to me an attempt at narrative manipulation, propaganda, and some form of grooming and psychically shaping how people are perceiving the event taking place. I think that is happening.
I agree as well, in the sense that how do we know that they're not lying to us to put us in a certain place or position or thought process and spread the lie further?
I want to hear about Patricia. She's not done her intro yet.
Oh, that's sweet of you, Jason. Thank you all for this opportunity to gather. It's very important. So I had difficulty joining earlier on. That's why I wasn't a speaker when I should have been. So thank you for your patience, everybody, and for all the contributions so far. So just a little bit about myself. Long story short, you know, this whole inclination towards space and life in the universe began for me in early childhood and adolescence. And what accompanied it was a pressure, some kind of pressure compelling me to go forward. And this pressure has been present my entire life. And I'm sensing that some of you have experienced this too. It's sort of an impelling force. But anyway, I was able to move beyond my early childhood circumstances, get my education, secure a career, and then get searching. Because the feeling I had was there's somewhere I need to be, or I was reluctant to think that there was someone I needed to meet, because I didn't want to do that, because there's too much emphasis around romance and all that within the culture, and it just turned me off in a way. But I began my search. I traveled the country looking. It took me a good 10 years to do that. And then ultimately, I encountered Marshall Vian Summers at a lecture he was giving in San Francisco. And there was an immediate feeling of, this is it. This is the time. This is the person. And I was rather personally shocked, but on a knowing level, it was a recognition that was pretty powerful. So as it were, we began our journey together, Marshall and I. And from the very beginning, there was this continuous pressure and being impelled. It was very powerful. The first ally, I was present for the first ally's communication that occurred. And it was really shocking and moving, and I didn't know quite how to contend with it. But what followed thereafter were mysterious journeys to certain places, high altitude environments that were very remote for Marshall. And like an antenna, he began, in a sense, to receive this incredible communication we were able to capture and begin to produce and record and share. Phenomenal. But the whole emphasis of the work that he began to receive had to do with the world's emergence into something called the greater community, a greater community of intelligent life. And my God, I mean, that would strike me in the heart, and it would talk about resonance. It's like, oh my God, there's finally words to describe what it is that's here, what it is that I'm here for, what it is that we're facing right now. So this revelation, flood of revelation continued, interspersed with these communications from the Allies of Humanity, which requested Marshall to bring that communication to people, not to government, not to elected officials, not to the intelligence community, right to the people. And as time went on, he began to teach about a greater community of intelligent life. And people around the world began to respond. And his work began to speak about an innate intelligence that we actually have two minds. We have the mind we think with, and then we have a mind beneath the mind that we know with. And that to face the situation that is here now, that has been coming for some time, that's here now, we need greater intelligence. We need greater intelligence. And so an incredibly powerful pathway process or book was received by Marshall called Steps to Knowledge, the Book of Inner Knowing. And it's like a midwife. It's meant to birth out of us this submerged intelligence and to bring it to the fore so that we have greater access to what we see and know, and therefore what we must do. And so all of this was very empowering, compelling, and I just see this as an important time. We need this thinking, knowing intelligence. There needs to be greater sense of personal responsibility. Many people around the world, actually, if they were to admit, they might feel that they were actually sent here for these times, even though these times are getting more and more difficult. They have been difficult all along, if you look through history, of course, for sure, in terms of our ancestors and what they endured and went through. But look at what's now and what's coming. And so this is our time. I kind of relate to some of what Jason was saying about knowing yourself, because part of this deep intelligence is here to help us understand how we are and how we be. And I think that's an ultimately very compassionate and stable place and position to take with oneself, is I know myself well enough to know that this or that or this or that. So I think, you know, this is an important consideration, the self-knowledge, the contribution that it has to make, because ultimately your personality, your mind, and your body are your vehicles. And so how are they? How are they coping with this? How are they coping with what you're now knowing? You know, and I would say that with regard to this greater intelligence, this self-knowledge, this knowledge aspect of the mind, I think it may provide for us some neuroprotection, believe it or not, because I think, not just I think, it's been said through Marshall's work that this region of the mind is beyond influence. It's a direct perception. It has direct perceptual capabilities and noetic capabilities. So I think, and you know, the question for all of this is what helps us to more or less engage with that aspect of our mind, or even consciously step into that part of our mind. And there are times when it's really important to do that, when you need to stand up and really look at something and say, my God, what is this? What the hell is this? You know, and that's a question for your deeper mind. Step forward and to provide whatever impressions it has with regard to one's experience. So I've had the privilege of assisting with this. There's people around the world now. They're engaging with Steps to Knowledge and the greater community aspect of the work. The Allies of Humanity briefings are actually very moving to engage with. This is a communication timely and needed, and it's empowering. So I'm grateful to be a part of this whole movement and to be here with you all.
You know, like, those messages already resonate with me, and they're positive messages. And I'm in my 40s. I got maybe 40 years left on this earth, right? Like it's a positive, uplifting message. And you know, I just don't see a reason why anyone would deny those messages or see where else this journey might lead.
If I could just respond to Steve. Yeah, I hear you, Steve. And I, you know, it's for each of us to discern the nature of the communication and the nature of the communicator. My call is for a discussion about criteria. You know, what are the intentional criteria we would apply to discern the veracity of a non-human communication, especially one that's being given to influential people, people in government, people in decision-making roles, because that's going to have a big impact, not just on ourselves and the message we find authentic for us personally, but for potentially the outcome for the human species. And so I think that's important. I think we need to step back and take a full accounting and assess the phenomenon that's in our world. Abductees have reported broadly being groomed to perform telepathic duties upon a non-human intelligence self-disclosure. and basically what would probably be a deceptive event. And so we have such an actor in our world, I feel. And so we have to take that into full account, and we most urgently need such criteria because there are thousands of these communications coming into the world. And, of course, we have lost our data set. The NHI have sucked up all our data, I have no doubt. They've analyzed us neurologically, biochemically, our reproductive systems for decades, possibly longer, even a century. So they know exactly what makes us tick. They can affect different emotional, even spiritual or pseudo-spiritual experiences within those they engage with. I mean, this is well documented in the induction phenomenon. So I am in no way judging anyone's contact experience. I'm simply calling for a broad-based discussion about how we vet communications, knowing that we have probably a detrimental or adversarial actor who has demonstrated the capability of neurologic control and who has intervened in people's self-expression, free will, and basically forced them to have a certain set of experiences that they did not consensually agree to. So with such an actor, there is some urgency to get this right. And we're already late. And so just broadly, you know, if someone says, oh, I had this experience and they said it was this and it was love and light, I have to sit back and go, uh-huh, okay, well, where does the power go? What is their ask? What is the level of involvement they're calling for with us? These are litmus tests in my view. So that's my broad call. But I absolutely am on the side of experiencers and those who have had contact. I can relate to how difficult it is. I have had a whole lifetime of experiences myself, and so I'm not a stranger to that.
So that begs my second question to Reed, and Anjali, we can get back to the other Eric Davis question. But Reed, you've mentioned a couple times that you feel that there are bad actors, and so this brings to mind, you know, the different categorization of beings and also Hal Puthoff's paper about the different types of being, ultra-terrestrial, crypto-terrestrial, it all kind of falls in line with, you know, Eric Davis and Hal Puthoff's work. And so I'm just wondering, can you clarify for us, does this bad actor fall into any of those categories? Will you name who you believe the bad actor to be now?
Sure, we could definitely talk about kind of the force composition of what are the entities and forces that might be in our space. You know, I think that there are a large handful, not just of single entity groups, but of multiracial groups. And they are embedding themselves in different ways in our world with different geopolitical actors, transacting technology for access to human population and for support of bases of operation to conduct a very long-term project with the human species. I've corroborated that with some former government people who I would trust tremendously, and I know you all would too if you knew who they were, and I'm unfortunately not at liberty to mention their names, but they have strongly corroborated that assessment, that we are looking at a playing field of exopolitical interests that have come into our world at a very opportune moment, a perfect storm, you might call it, of environmental destruction, development of weapons that can alter the habitability of the Earth permanently, significant world conflicts, etc. And so when they came and how they came, I think, can help us understand why they came. Context can help reveal contact here. Why didn't they come in the 1800s and just kind of slowly educate us about themselves and our larger exosystem or our environment of life beyond our world? I would also say that there might have been entities at that time, but they are qualitatively and quantitatively different in the visitation now versus presumably then or hundreds of years ago. I think we're dealing with a modern wave that came at a very specific point in the development of human civilization and a point where humanity very overtly has threatened the value of the planet. And, you know, Marshall, you're here. You've made this argument many times that they're here for the planet, not for us, lest we think that we are that important in the universe. When you destroy environments of value among species that compete for resource and environment by necessity out of a Darwinian type, you know, set of challenges, beware. you might invite not only scrutiny and observation, but direct intervention into the affairs of your species. I think that's what we're looking at. And so I don't view this as a 50-50 toss-up, good ET, bad ET. You know, there's five good ones and five bad ones. I am focused on the fact that there is a bad actor in our world. And they are not only taking people against their will and performing acts of really criminal, of a criminal nature upon those individuals, not all the individuals taken are returned. There's an unknown number of disappeared humans in our world. That is the bad actor in our world. And I think we need to recognize that. We need to center the controversy there. I'm sure human actors, whether in our own government in this country or others, have collaborated and facilitated. There might be crimes against humanity there too. However, were they playing a part in another larger orchestration, or were they the orchestrator? And of course, the assumption these days is no. The U.S. government, these bad actors in our defense establishment, they're the bad actors, and the NHI are the neutrals. They're just waiting for the bad human leaders to get out of the way so they can reveal their presence to humanity. My goodness, folks, that is such a dangerous assumption. And it is so askance to the observed record of how these beings have interfaced with us in our world. So I'll stop there. Happy to go deeper.
I have a question, a follow-up with what you were just talking about, because how do we move forward in educating? And, you know, because everybody wants to bring the NHI and the craft on the front lawn of the White House. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only way I'm going to believe it. And so how do we help these people? How do we help humanity? Like, what are your thoughts regarding that?
Yeah. I think it's already happening. There is an orchestration underway to help acclimate people not only to the reality of non-human entities, but also to their true activities in our human space to some degree. I don't think that'll be a full disclosure. And it may not be an honest one, or a sufficiently honest one, I should say. So I don't lean entirely or trust entirely the intent of that orchestration. But I am aware and have come across information confirming to the satisfaction of my evidentiary requirements that the U.S. government has been in a position of overall opposition to this bad actor. They are in a quiet, hot war with it. They are attempting to shoot these craft out of the sky and eliminate their occupants. Now, you could immediately jump to that as being an example of our human violence and aggression and the fact that, look at us, the bad actor. Well, we don't understand the playing field and the players on the court right now. We really don't. And again, this is top of my mind these days. And I hate to be the one to have to confront this, because I'm actually not a very confrontational person by nature. This is very out of character for me at times. But the field is, I hate to say, so very blind to the non-human set of intelligences and their actual activity in our world. And we are misidentifying humans as the negative force and non-humans as the beneficial force. It's the whole field is profoundly swayed. If we want to talk about too far to the left or right, oh my goodness, human bad, ET good. There, I've said it. That's the summary of the psychic or kind of emotional assessment that we have tacitly made. And so I need to confront that. I don't believe accurate, and I don't believe it's even logical to think that way. And so as more of the human species comes into this space with disclosure, I'm talking about hashtag UFO Twitter going from roughly 150,000 eyeballs to maybe 100 million eyeballs, right? How should the bulk humanity be thinking about this? It is not make contact. It is not open up your psychic channels. It is not trust in ET godfathers, grandmothers, brothers, sisters, progenitors, originators. It is not ancient aliens. It is species-to-species contact with other forms of intelligent life who are here to compete with us for environment and for resource, and possibly to integrate with us out of their own intent, which may not be, in their view, a negative intent. They may be doing the right thing, but we need to square that up with our intent. And of course, as a species, we've hardly even articulated our intent. So that's, as I view it, the state of affairs. And, you know, there are so many flashpoints and points of vulnerability, like I mentioned, that could be used against the human species in some way. And I think we need to identify those and address how that could happen. And the conversation is just so nascent on all of this. And I don't guilt anyone for that. I think that's part of the obfuscation. To center the controversy on human bad actors, to degrade people's trust in institutions and leadership, to repaint the narrative of human origins with extraterrestrial seeding of intelligence, which I actually believe occurred, but not necessarily by the entities here now. See, again, we've lost our data set. If we're worried about AI, how about non-human intelligence using our data with their own AI? You know, we're oblivious to the game in which we are in. And so that's my chief concern. And if I sound confrontational, that's why. I am alarmed at the state of things in the world and also the state of this inquiry. And it needed to have come further. And it has been heavily, heavily obfuscated and redirected. And I see that everywhere.
In my view, we are at a threshold of who is going to have this earth. And they are coming at a time when they know we're breaking down. They probably examine our atmosphere. They know the changing atmospheric conditions. They would know from knowledge in the universe about what happens to a planet who unwittingly, through industrialization, technological development, you can destroy their atmosphere and what that can mean and how the effect on their natural resources will be altered as a result. So we are at a time of converging great waves of change. I call them the great waves of change, which are environmental, sociopolitical, economic, and, of course, exopolitical. So this is a perfect time for intervention. They have only to build enough people to support their narrative and their presence here and encourage others to look the other way. They have people in places, hybrids, trained hybrids, who they raise in their own facilities but are human-looking, but they're not really human, to enter into areas of background roles in industry, government, and religion. So we're being infiltrated from the inside out. But we're up at the surface trying to use our own spiritual narratives or our own understanding to fit this in. And I'm saying we have to look at the native peoples of our world. This is how I think it's beneficial to consider ourselves facing intervention from races who have been here for a long time, who have embedded themselves in the world, who are not revealing their purpose, intent, or activities, who are having tremendous impact on people they take for different purposes, are affecting military installations around the world, and there's a lot of history about that that's worth looking at. I mean, when you start to look at this on a practical sense, there's just no way you can see this as a beneficial force. And it does, as Reed said, it doesn't matter if there are other good races here. I don't really think there are. Because if this race is that powerful in our midst, they're going to drive out all competitors or others with competing agendas. And we could be sending messages from space to us, and I think that does happen. I think that can be very legitimate if we know how to interpret it. But we're at a cusp, and the world will be unrecognizable in 20 years. That was given to me in 2009. That means 2029. That doesn't mean that it's visibly different. There's still mountains, there's still cities, there's still people, there's still everything, but everything has changed in terms of the mental environment, the range of concern, the priorities of the world, and things like this. So within the next two or three decades, I mean, we're going to go down the canyon wall and you're going to have to climb up the other side. That's one of the ways I visualize that. So I know we're in a declining situation, and that is the perfect environment for intervention, particularly intervention that wants to preserve the physical landscape as much as possible and us as a workforce, because they can't live here. They can't live here because of the atmosphere, and they can't live here because of the biohazard of the world. It's been estimated that planet Earth has 1,300,000 organisms that can make humanity sick. Well, for them, they live in sterile environments, assuredly, and living in the world is highly hazardous. So they would need us to be their workforce. Not compatriots, but workforce. And if we were to give over to their promises of establishing peace and free energy, they would dismantle all forms of authority in our world, and they would eliminate, in some way, all those who oppose them. This is the kind of this is the kind of threat narrative that I'm not a threat kind of person, like Rita said. I'm not an adversarial person. But this is the reality that has been presented to me, both through my spiritual contact and also the theology briefings. You're giving us a picture of life beyond our world so we can understand who's here, why they're here, what they're doing, what gives them strength, and what limits what they can do. So I think we have enough to know and to assess this on a very practical level. It's not here to fulfill our spiritual ideas or here to make us, you know, believe in our religions more fervently. It is an existential threat to humanity. They're not going to wipe us out because they need us. But they would re-employ us in ways we'd never want to be re-employed. Should we give over the reins of authority and government, which would have to happen if we followed their promises, it would be the end of humanity as a free race in the universe. It would be the end of civilization as we know it. So this is the kind of threshold that I see this as, which is not just, you know, we're not going to tiptoe into this, or we're not going to treat it as a possibility, and we're not going to get lost in possibilities because we have an existential reality that can be discerned from what we know already if we look at the evidence of their presence and activities in the world without trying to make this what we want it to be. Because they'll speak to what we want it to be, and they'll try to be that for us. So we have to use our native intelligence, what I call knowledge, our historical awareness, what has history taught us about intervention. That has to be predominant in our approach. Otherwise, we're going to give away this world to forces we know nothing about who have convinced us that they know more than we how to save the world from disaster and that they're here to help us or do that for us. So I'm kind of dealing with this on that kind of level because I've been with this for almost 40 years and I've seen the damage that they have done and are doing in the world today. It's all beneath the surface, of course, but once you dig in a little bit, you can begin to see its effect on people, how it deranges people, how it keeps people looking the other way. I mean, we're giving the place away by our avoidance, our ignorance, and our false assumptions. And this is the level at which this is really happening. It's not for the transcendence of humanity. And the greater community that's been presented to me is very prosaic. It's not a realm of enlightened worlds waiting for us to join them. This is a competitive environment out there. You know, scarcity of resources is everywhere in the universe. If you're going to survive in that universe as a free race, you have to be united, you have to be self-sufficient, and you have to be very discreet. Those three things is a wisdom foundation for how we're going to be able to make it to become a free race. At this moment, we're a set of warring tribes, we're degrading ourselves in the world, and inviting intervention. And so we have a huge challenge. I believe that those of you who are here probably, many of the people, have a greater community nature to you. I mean, there's something about the greater community, life in the universe, the stars, space, which has maybe always had an attraction for many of you. You've always been drawn to it, had an innate sense of its importance for our future. So the first people we're going to have to reach are the people who have this native sense. I mean, trying to reach the average person who doesn't have this experience would be very difficult. And so there are many of us in the world today. We've been sent into the world today to be a part of this great transition, a great threshold. And then millions and millions of people, if they can be reached, and they would be open to it. Maybe they would be resistant at first, but somehow, like many of you, resistant at first, once you began to adapt yourself to this reality, you begin to resonate. And there are many people in the world today who will naturally resonate with this reality and even with the possibility of it being a possible threat, which is not really where people want it to be. But, you know, we have to deal with life as it is, not as we want it to be. That's maturity. So we're small, but the seeds of truth grow through individuals and networks of individuals. This is how great wisdom travels in the world. So we are here doing that together today. And we have different viewpoints and different emphases, certainly. But we're still facing the same reality. And it's not happening on our terms. And we have no say in how it plays itself out, except to learn how to resist it. Because if people cannot be turned to the intervention cannot succeed. That is the bottom line of how to deal with this. It can't take the world by force. It can't, it's not allowed or part of the universe to do that. I don't have time to go into that today, but why that is the case. They must use devious means, subtle means to gain influence, playing the long game to achieve their goals. And so we're the people burdened with a certain degree of knowledge of this, and it is a burden, I acknowledge, I say that. It's a burden for me. But it's important that we have this burden because we have the opportunity to share basic awareness that we're not alone. We're dealing with unknown forces who are operating our world without our permission, without our awareness, and are doing possibly dangerous things. That's a good starting point right there. I have to take it all the way because I think I don't even need the government to disclose. We don't need, the government has two functions. One is to keep hidden the alien presence in the world, and two is to back engineer and create different technology which they cannot share because there are other nations in the world who are doing the same thing. It's an arms race, technological arms race. So there's two functions to that. But we've been given something that can bypass government disclosure.
Reed, did you want to follow up with any comments about some of my pickups about NPI and your course and just some of those things that I commented on in transition before we went to Jason? I can remind you, but I'm sure you're probably listening.
Yeah. I remember. Well, just to clarify, I am not a partner of NPI. I was invited to teach a course. The course has concluded. So NPI has not asked to square up their ideologies with my own or to sync with me lockstep. So I gave my course. I was asked to very directly share what I know to be true about the NHI. And I did that in the best way I could. Most important to me is to introduce not what I think is happening, but to help others in how to think through it for themselves. And I'm not going to tell you how to think, let alone what to think, but I do think there are human capabilities that are missing and or have been downregulated, such as an instinctual response, caution and responsibility, the use of logic, referring to valuable fields of human knowledge, such as species interaction, most notably human species interaction in the form of human history and the record of colonization, and how thousands upon thousands of different forces have tended to interact, compete, intervene, and out evolve one another. And so I think there's that's not to say that is what is happening with NHI, but it's part of our human, historical, tribal, and indigenous record. And I think it's also very important in helping people in the world. I talked about that 150 million who are going to kind of be dumped into this space all of a sudden through the ontological shock of sudden awareness that we're being visited. Human beings know what colonization is. They know what intervention is. They know what competition is. And by the way, it's not just human beings. There have been billions of species in the 4.5 billion years of life on Earth that have shown us how species tend to interact. Again, it doesn't contain the event taking place or determine it, but it does help inform a logical and responsible starting point to assess it. So that's what I'm introducing. I know Danny and the other folks at NPI, you know, they're marching on to different script in different ways. I support the disclosure effort, absolutely. I am also, if I may just say, you know, because you did ask, you know, how can the global, or I'm sorry, if it wasn't you, if somebody asked, how can people out in the world be brought into an awareness of this contact event and this potential detrimental or adversarial set of actors? One very important thing is understanding that the NHI, that detrimental force specifically, does not want disclosure. So now look out on the world. Look at human governments. Who wants disclosure? I think this is a very important gauge to assess the involvement of those detrimental NHI with certain actors on the geopolitical stage, because if it comes out that the U.S. government is broadly in support of this and another government or another opposing government is broadly against it or in resistance to it, I think that will go a certain distance to revealing where the NHI is, who they're working with, and who is actually in resistance to them. Unfortunately, I've been also made aware that the NHI are responding to the, as they see it, threat of U.S. government disclosure and are hastening their plans for self-disclosure dramatically on an order of possibly even decades faster than they had prior plans to do. And, you know, this is where I go back to the record of human NHI interaction in the abduction phenomenon. Look at what abductees have been told is coming, have been groomed to do, the role that they have been prepared to enact, and the degree to which that is neurologic, telepathic, and the emphasis to influence large swaths of the human population upon an NHI self-disclosure. Just think about that, because the potential for a false disclosure is real, not just by the NHI, but by the governments currently engaged. I don't put it past them, and I don't think there's only one faction at work. I think there are competing factions, as you all, I'm sure, have sensed yourself. So part of what I, you know, advocate is that the human record, the human NHI interface, has to come forward globally now and be a part of the disclosure conversation to authenticate the disclosure event, because it could be loaded with deception. And I want to hear from abductees. I want to hear from the people who have been touched by this physically, who have been taken, right? And they're out there. There are unknown tens of thousands of them, and they are terrified to speak. There is kind of a denigration of maybe a denigration of self that's been encouraged by, you know, just by virtue of being tainted by what's happened. You know, such similar to like a rape victim, right? You know, they don't want to speak out against the perpetrator. They're terrified to do so. The reprisal and the impact on their lives would be tremendous. So I would like to hear from these folks. So if that clarifies.
Does everybody else feel that way and feel that kind of conundrum that I just described about if there is this tech exchange, which I know there is that really something they should have ever engaged in? You know, whether you, the humans in the program or the NHI, is that something they ever should have considered doing? Or is that an indicator and a big indicator that they mean us harm in the long run? And that's kind of what I want to pose to the group here.
Oh, I just wanted to respond to the question of alien technologies that Jason began to respond to. I definitely second some of the questions that Jason raised regarding should these technologies have been introduced by NHI? Should governments have been willing to accept them? I just want to call people's attention to a documentary. Highly recommend you watch it. It's called The AI Dilemma. And in that dilemma, one of the founders of the Center for Humane Technology, Azar Raskin, introduces these three rules regarding new technologies. The first is that when you uncover a new technology, you uncover a new class of responsibilities. Think about that in relation to alien technologies. Second, if that new tech confers power, it will start a race. Think about that in relation to the introduction of these technologies. And rule three, if you do not coordinate, that race will end in tragedy. And so, you know, in my mind, this is an alarming aspect of what NHI have done in our human space since the end of World War II, post, you know, with the beginning of the nuclear age and the initiation of the Cold War. Why are they transacting technologies with different state actors that they know are already in competition, even at a Cold War level? Why are they giving technologies that can be weaponized? They know that we would do that. We have to assume that they know everything about us at this point. That is a very responsible assumption to make. So that they're just wandering into our space and just dropping little gifts and hoping for the best, come on, they know. They know. They are engaged in a programmatic level in our world. And so that they would do that, given the current geopolitical state of affairs and the balance of power and the fact that we are in a unipolar world post-Cold War, but that is being hotly contested by other world powers. There is a breakup of the Western-led liberal order. underway, which I don't ascribe to the NHI specifically. I think it's just underway for many reasons. But these technologies, we have to ask, are they Trojan? Is this Trojan tech? Are all those downed craft actual accidents or evidence of aggression by government, or were they deposited there with things for us to find, knowing that that could create channels of competition between state and non-state actors that could be then utilized, knowing that it could create dependencies on the inputs needed to either maintain that tech or to expand it for deployment in the world or for military purposes. They know. The NHI know what they're doing. And so we have to look at what they are doing to gain some starting assessment of intent. You know, anyone can say anything. The NHI can say, we're here for your environmental crisis. We're here because we fathered your race. We're here, whatever. It can all be narrative. We have to square all of that up with what we can observe taking place. And I think that we have gone very far down this road of making transactions, not saying we the citizens, more we the human governments. And is that a factor in the current picture of tension in the world? Ukraine, Taiwan, the breakdown of social norms and electoral systems in the West. Again, if the West has largely been in an oppositional position to the non-human intelligence, is there a quiet war going on, a culture war, to attack the foundations of the West? These are questions, and I think these are the kinds of things we need to be thinking about.
I want to bring forth something that was at the beginning of the Allies briefings, which were given over a long period of time in a series of four briefings. So one of the things they said right up front was that nobody should be interfering with humanity at this time. No other race should be interfering with humanity's evolution. If we make a mess of the planet, it's our mess to deal with. If we're ever going to have species maturity and we do a downfall over the century, which is very likely, we have to face that and deal with the results of that. And any group that would come here, no matter what they proclaim, would be coming here to establish themselves. And they would use our exigency, our tragedy, in order to support their activity in establishing that. So the warning of any kind of intervention in the world physically. And they also said no ally of humanity, no race that would support humanity's freedom or is aware of humanity's existence, supporting humanity's freedom, would ever intervene in the world physically. It can send messages to the world. The angelic presence can send messages to the world. No one should be physically engaged in the world. That is a fundamental violation of a race's sovereignty and self-determination. So this is a statement almost from the beginning of the Allies of Humanity briefings. And it's really affected me because we keep trying to make excuses for the alien presence here. We keep trying to justify its presence. We keep trying to give it meaning and purpose. We look for benefit. We hope for benefit. When in fact, the very fact that they have established themselves in the world is a fundamental violation of human sovereignty and self-determination. So I just want to share that thought.
Legal implications for people working in programs. Go ahead, Reed.
Thanks, Courtney. Yeah, I second that. Truth and Reconciliation. I mean, the culpability is just off the charts. And I look forward to seeing what Chris offered in Lou's book there. I don't know what the intel failure exactly was that he's referring to. But I don't doubt that there's only one. There's been waves of them, I would say. You know, back to kind of who's at fault here, I think that's a great question. And it should not be an automatic human. Humans are at fault. We have to step back from those kinds of assumptions and really analyze the field. You know, it takes two to tango. And which actor is the one that understood the other? Which is the one that took their time to analyze, pluck humans off the surface of the earth and analyze every facet of their functioning? You know, it wasn't us versus on them. So they have tremendous intel on us. They understand the exosystem that our world exists in. We don't. And so we're at a disadvantaged position. And so, you know, when I look back over the 20th century, you know, where did the hockey stick turn upwards in terms of UFO sightings? Post-war, you know, nuclear detonations, Cold War kickoff, tremendous rapid advances in our technological ability, the building of a global system, even during the Cold War, but more specifically after. I mean, these are unprecedented advancements in human civilization across its many tens of thousands of year run-up. So, you know, they came then. What does that mean? They have remained in secrecy. They have been in a state of non-disclosure. They have worked with competing state actors. They have been taking people. They have been preparing for some, quote, event, as so many abductees refer to it. I mean, what kind of intelligence picture is starting to form from this? It's not to say that intel picture is 100% high, you know, confidence. It's not. They never are. But it's a starting point. And so, you know, I think back, you know, to when these craft probably made their first contacts with the major world powers all throughout the 50s, maybe it's the 40s. And I can see how things got off track so early. There was a need for a certain set of responses and for a certain level of intelligence success at that time. And if Chris is referring to a failure of intel at that point, I'm not surprised. But why did things get off track so profoundly, so early, in terms of the secrecy and the compartmentalization and the adopting of technologies and science potentially? Well, we're dealing with a sentience, right? It's non-mechanistic. It has an intent, I guarantee you. What is the intent? Well, there's a lot of data points available in the record of what they have done, but also in the record of what they have not done. What has NHI not done that would incontrovertibly demonstrate positive intent in a way that human beings could more or less agree upon and unite around in terms of responding to that presence? Wow. Okay, you're talking about the missing 99% right there. Right. So what they have done and what they haven't. Government, it's clear to me, and it's actually been told to me, has lost control of the programs. They went into the private sector, and this happened decades ago. And so these are black boxes. And the elected government, possibly even the non-elected, does not have a window in on what is in those black boxes. These are transnational entities, right? So it's not as if a U.S. corporation can be, you know, can be with eminent domain brought to account or brought to court in this country alone. They're not in this country alone. And then, you know, how often do we talk about Russia and China? Rarely. Partly because we know nothing. We know nothing. We have no intelligence into the nature of NHI collaboration in those countries. So, I think there's a huge risk, and I sense this might be, you know, partly where Lou is coming from, and maybe Chris. There is a huge risk of the failure of the citizen-government relationship, the tacit, unspoken agreement to be governed by an institution, set of institutions, because of the culpability, because of the human involvement in what I would term the NHI secrecy. And, you know, I'd ask this question to everyone. If UFOs had never appeared in the 20th century, would our world be different? How would it be different? And that's not to put all the blame on non-humans, right? I mean, I'm sure there's a ton of blame on humans in terms of their decisions. But we don't know the kind of leverage and the kind of quiet threats that might have been levied against them in secret that have forced them, maybe not forced even, but influenced them to accept certain terms that they have suffered with ever since. And so think about that and think about a potential quiet hot war and a opposing information war. And that, you know, the truth is human leadership may be in the recognition, some in leadership, that we are losing the information war, and they know it. And the citizens must be brought into acknowledgement and awareness of the force present. Otherwise, government can fight it all they want in secret, but the NHI wins. They claim the minds of the people, hearts and minds. And so if there's an intelligence failure being brought out into the public, I'm not surprised. But I would kind of urge us to not make that the point of fixation. Step back and see the larger gravitational accretion of secrecies and misdeeds that might have occurred, and think, you know, what created this gravitational pull inward? It's not just evil humans or evil governments. So I think NHI is in there. You know, I think there are levels of reality we need to deal with. We need to deal with them in a stepwise fashion. Are we the owners of the earth, like literal property ownership? Perhaps not. And we have to get down to what our functional ownership of territory and resource, right to breathe, etc., really is. However, I would assert that we have a set of sovereign rights as a species and as individual sentient entities. We have the right to access our divinity. Okay. And now if another entity comes into our space and through genetic interventions, neurologic interventions, prevents that, that's a violation just of that individual sovereign right. But functionally, in reality, we have sovereign rights in this earth. Nation states right now, written into law, have sovereign rights over territory, right? Airspace, sea space, land. And so, you know, we have to be careful, I think, to not write into ownership or sovereign rights the NHI themselves, saying, well, we humans have no right to assert sovereignty. And by the way, there's a maybe chance that they were here before us, or that they seeded us, or that they are still here as a crypto-terrestrial entity. You know, maybe is just not going to be good enough for the world to respond to this event on the appropriate timeline and with any degree of unity. There's not going to be evidence that future humans are what these entities are on a timeline necessary for our human response. We're already 80 years late. And by the way, you know, I know we like to throw around these theories, and they are theoretically viable. I mean, it's possible they are future humans. It's possible that they are an escaped civilization, right, that left a million years ago, went elsewhere, and is coming back. It's possible that there's a crypto-terrestrial element. I don't deny that possibility. But to functionally verify that, wow. And also knowing that it opens, and it's a narrative opening for the NHI to write themselves into our origins and into the sovereign rights that we, the species, do need to hold. And so there is risk there. I'll just add, you know, I hear the future humans thing pretty frequently. And, you know, are chimpanzees humans? Look at the physiology, the phenotype of a chimp related to a gray or a mantid, right? Even if these entities did arise on the earth, are they human? I doubt it. Now, that said, I think this is a whole new conversation that we need to get into, which is, what are the lines that delineate our human species identity? What are the sovereign domains that we have rightful access, that we should have rightful access to? This is a global conversation. It can't be resolved in a Twitter space. I look forward to the experts weighing in. But again, I'm thinking whole species response. And so functionally, you know, we can't entertain every possibility, because functionally it's not possible to act on that in any sort of global or international sense. So, you know, there are possibilities for future exploration, and then there's immediate intelligence that we need now to inform present action. And I think there is some separation of the two that's important. Marshall, I'll cede it to you from here. I guess I can go there, and I'll also fold this into, I think there was a question to me about ancient aliens, or that I am, am I opposed to that reality in some fashion? So I'm not. I acknowledge the likelihood of ancient forms of contact. The problem is that prove it. Prove that the current entities visiting our world are the ones referenced in those ancient scriptures and those ancient accounts, which themselves, being thousands of years in arrears, do have less veracity in terms of evidential, provable, verifiable qualities. So, I mean, and also, even if you think you can prove that an entity referenced in a scripture of one native tribe of one continent is the entity here today, convince the world. Go convince the world. The utility of such things is very low. And it actually sets up basically taking sides. You know, oh, I'm for this NHI. They're the ones who are in my Bible. Oh, I'm not Christian. I'm Muslim. Screw that. I mean, you see, and so it's more division. And though there may be some accuracy to ancient accounts, there's just so little usability to it. We have to deal with the entity that's here now. And what I do see is I see a rapid leap to belief. That if this was spoken of by an ancient entity, person, religion, scripture, it's the ones visiting us now, right? Probably. There's kind of a dot, dot, dot. And I'm thinking, not necessarily. Absolutely in no way, unless you can make it, unless you can prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt. And so I just feel like there's not a lot of purpose to go into the ancient record now, as it relates to this wave of visitation. Ultimately, of course there is, because we do need to understand our human origins and our relationship to the universe. But we do need to know also, with maybe a side comment on the Nazca mummies and other such lines of argumentation, that the current visitors are somehow related to us, have sovereign rights over the earth, or were involved in authoring or seeding humanity. Right, that is a ready-made, served on a platter, position for the NHI who want to claim some sort of habitation in the world or integration with us to pursue and to encourage us to pursue. Not to say that they are patently not true or false, but the opportunity for narrative manipulation is tremendous. And so again, like, what is the utility? Can it be used intelligently by some sort of majority human voice to articulate a human response to the contact event taking place? A lot of these kind of rabbit holes and alleyways that we might want to go down, they don't have a lot of utility. And there might be actors that want us to go down them to further obfuscate and blunt the impact that those who are aware of the phenomenon are going to have.
I just want to add to that Richard Dolan, who I consider to be the world's foremost historian on the history of contact in our world, really thinks that the evidential things from the ancient past is far too vague, not as evidential as it is relevant to what we're dealing with today, and that the forces who are in our world today have never really been here before. They're very different. They're not coming here to take, you know, samples, biological samples. They're not here to just set up a trial residence. They're not here to observe native peoples. This is an entirely different force that we're dealing with now. So trying to connect this with ancient prophecy or ancient records, in his view, and I share his view, is really, it's far-reaching. It's not really central to what we're looking at here today. So that means that we're dealing with a new force, a different force, a force that is planned for its presence here, a force that puts a lot of weight on persuasion, obfuscation, and intrigue and secrecy. So how are we going to deal with the present and the future? The present and the future are the two big emphases right now, because they're being shaped as we speak. And that's why I say this is a threshold for humanity. And I think that more people can see and know that, it really changes our perspective, and it clarifies the picture somewhat enough for us to deal with the central event of our time.
I'm only saying that now because that aggressive, egotistical, we've got it figured out and you don't, and you need to prove it and we don't listen to what we're saying, I'm not down for it, gentlemen.
If I can clarify, I did not say if you believe in an ancient entity, prove it. I said, prove that that's the one in our world now. Why? Because humanity will need to act upon that intelligence and that conclusion. Very difficult.
Well, why don't you prove to us that it's not? Where's your proof that it isn't?
Because to assert that an extraterrestrial is connected to our religious scriptures, our prophets, our gods, is a much more consequential assertion than to say they may not be. And so the burden of proof
is that what you're saying, that they're connected to gods? Because I haven't heard anybody today on here except you say that we're saying that they're gods.
Well, I'm not saying you are, Anjali. I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I don't mean, I'm just saying I haven't heard any of that
I'm pushing back in the name of everyone who are being told to prove it when you're just running hot shot right over it and not offering us any proof.
Yeah, I mean, the assertion that, and you're not making it, just to clarify, but others are, a lot of others, that the present visitors are the entities referenced in certain biblical texts, in certain tribal prophetic messages, is a dramatic assertion. And if the human species is going to respond to that in a non-divisive way, meaning we agree, it's going to take tremendous proof to make that assertion. Let me correlate this to something. Marshall Summers, my father, asserts that he has had contact with a group of entities, okay, called the Allies of Humanity. I don't have to offer you proof that that occurred, you know, but part of the reason for me not preferring such proof is I'm not asserting that those entities are here to steward our race forward in some grand sense, or that we need to do X, Y, and Z in light of them. The claim or the ask is much lower with those briefings. Those briefings are here to corroborate what we ourselves can come to know on our own, through our own human sensing of the phenomenon. They are not a message of salvation asking for the human species to buy in. And so, but there are others who are making that assertion about other entities. And I would say, I mean, it's an obvious thing. It's like, if you're really going to assert that on the world stage, you would need to prefer considerable evidence that those entities visiting us now are the same that were referenced in an ancient text. So, I mean,
well, I would also.
I'm thinking out of utility here, because my eyes are on the horizon of okay, it's been 80 or 100 or more years, and we are not effectively responding to this as a species. That's a problem. That's the problem I live with. That's the problem I'm trying to contribute towards. So if I'm stomping my foot, it's because get ready for the world to stomp their foot. And I would like to just briefly, I do have to run shortly, and I wanted to respond to Ulrich's passionate statements about the experts. I don't know if now's the moment. I'll give you, Anjali, a chance to respond first.
Kind of distinguish that line of, because I just don't think it matters.
I agree in large part that we have to deal with the entity that's here. There's a historic record in the modern era when we have sensing instruments and others that can collect data on them. Why are we dipping into ancient biblical references and questioning the very foundations of human existence? I mean, if there is an intruder in the house, or at least a potentially unwelcome or unwelcomed visitor, why are we questioning the origins of humanity?
The past doesn't determine the future. And so it really doesn't. And new things happen on Earth. And humanity, through its stages of evolution, changes the nature of culture and history and understanding, certainly. So I think it's dangerous to be too easily assuming that the past is a continuous truth in and of itself. I mean, the past is information, evidence, experience, fine. I'm not discounting it. But we're dealing with something very new and very different that I believe and has been formed to me that has never been here before. And it's here for very prosaic and competitive reasons. And if we're lost in the weeds otherwise, it's a weeds of possibilities. Well, it could be this, and it could be, you know, it could be other forms. They've been living here the whole time. There's really no evidence of that. Or, you know, they could be on some other level of reality, just visiting us. See, when we do that, the whole picture goes out of focus, and now we're living in a world of possibilities. And that disables us from dealing with an event in reality that's happening right before us and all around us, and even kind of within us, as we feel drawn into this subject, passionately drawn into this subject. So, and I acknowledge everyone here, if they have that passionate draw into the subject, I think that's native and essential. But we have to be careful not to bring too much of our past understanding into the picture, because it's a new picture. When I started out on this, I didn't have any opinions pro or con. I said, life in the universe, of course. Being visited, well, why not? My whole approach was evidential. What is the evidence of activities witnessed that we have available to us, people and people's experiences, which is partly subjective, partly objective. We have what we see them doing and not doing. I mean, if you follow the trail, the picture becomes a lot clearer. If you follow ideas and possibilities, the trail goes off in all directions, and you're going to be lost. You're never going to get this. And so that's why people say, we'll never understand this. That's because they're going in all directions. And there is a trail of evidence that the alien presence has left here that is discernible, accountable, and can be tracked and followed. And it points in certain directions. And it rules out certain things. So I can only ask people to be more evidential in their approach rather than ideological or even spiritually ideological, trying to make everything one and everything connected. I think that's an error in approach. We need a direct approach to this on the level in which it's happening. If you bring in other levels of meaning, well, they could be important, maybe, but they obfuscate the whole picture. And if you deal with everything on different levels at once, all the levels go out of focus, in my view. That's why I think the physical and the spiritual overlap, but they're not the same. They're totally not the same. And so if you try to make them all the same, then you're living in a fuzzy world of possibilities and gray zones. And I think we can't be in the gray zone about this. It's too late. And it's up for us citizens now to put some things together. And I think we have the tools to do that, but it has to be a very direct intent. And we're dealing with a physical presence who's here for a physical purpose. It's not in our benefit. They've done nothing to demonstrate benefit to us except empty promises of peace, technology, and salvation. So here we are, the native peoples of the world, facing an intervening presence who's working behind the scenes, altering at different levels the nature of our life and our future. So to me, that's a calling. It's not just an interest, it's a calling. So I respond at that level after 40 years. I recognize, wow, this is really a calling. This isn't just a fascinating thing. This is the biggest thing happening in the world today. Maybe this ever happened in the world today, or happened in the world period. So I wanted to present this. This is the approach I'm taking, because if we don't deal with nature at the level of nature first, then we may miss the whole picture and pay the effects, suffer the effects of that, which is very common in nature, by the way. He who does not prepare, he does not listen to nature, suffers from it. And so I want to just give this perspective. There's other possibilities, there's other realms, certainly. I'm not ruling that out. But we need to treat this up front as a real physical thing, and what has it shown us, and how can you learn from that? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. I've been sitting back just really being with each of each of you are presenting. So I just want you to know that I've been here with you all. So you know what's been coming to mind, and I actually have experienced probably decades of being close in to a certain kind of very special environment. These environments were emergency rooms and acute care settings, decades of this. And I had the great privilege of witnessing the clinicians and the staff, all the way down to the cleaning people, deal with whatever came through the door. And it was a powerful learning experience, and it provides a phenomenal metaphor, I think, because what I witnessed was what would come through the door was almost anything, right? It could be people, who had just undergone some kind of a car accident. They had injuries, fractures, trauma, fevers, whatever. Okay, and I know that sounds very dire, and I hate to cast this in a dire way, but just as a metaphor, consider this. And I would witness the staff, and what they would do is they would just look. At first, there was some uncertainty. There would be a moment of, what is this? And then they would literally have to connect with what they were seeing and getting. Okay, and so that environment was all about what is happening. What do we need to do? And they would dive in and they would do whatever they needed to do. If a patient had 104 fever, they dove in right away and they did what they had to do. And it was later that they looked at, what does this really mean? What does this fracture mean? What happened with this patient that they contracted? What did they contract that caused 104 degree fever? So they stayed in the space of what's happening and then what we must do. And later came all the possibilities that could have contributed. So in my mind, when I think of this whole contact issue, I think of two environments. There's that they're almost, they're connected, but they're separate. The first environment is what is happening? What exactly is happening? And sadly,
we have not been collecting the data. There's nowhere for people to go and report their experiences, whether they're observations or whether it's a direct experience, and how are they with it? What happened as a result of what they experienced that was outside the bounds for them, right? They had nowhere to go, unfortunately. So that's a problem. But for us to continue to consider what is happening, okay, and then later in a separate environment, because there's been an explosion of theories lately. I'm sure you've seen them online, all the possible theories, possibilities, et cetera. So if we keep these two environments somewhat separate so that the theories can continue, what we're concluding, deducing, whatever, that process can continue, but we at the same time are looking at just what is happening. And that continues to inform us as well, the other room. So I think, and I see the huge practical therapeutic value of the way that these kinds of situations were approached. But the first thing is what is happening. And to just look at that in and of itself. And I know there's no centralized location for any of that to be collected. And a lot of the data and observations, sensor data, you know, we can't interpret it. It needs to be interpreted by somebody else. It needs to be brought forward. And it's not. So I understand that. And that complicates our ability to go on and consider what we must do. So what is happening informs what we must do. And then what we must do needs to be looked at repeatedly to see if it needs revision. So anyway, that's the kind of framework I function in, and I apply to this whole situation, the opportunity and the problem of the situation.
Yeah, hey, I had to jump back in here. You know, Marshall, did you say no NHI presence has done anything for humanity? I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, nothing discernible that would affect a lot of people. They've kept certain abductees alive, I'm sure, but I've seen no evidence of 80 years of doing anything beneficial for humanity. I think, you know, my whole work is positive. I mean, I'm assessing a very negative situation, as well as climate change, state of the world. But it's all about empowering people to gain their greater intelligence, to be able to face a changing world, challenges from beyond, all these things. So, I mean, obviously, we've needed to get input from some level. I'm just focusing on the nature of this force that's in the world today. And some people claim to have good experiences, fine. And many do not. And many people have been very damaged. I've been living for around 30 years with people, not because I inquired upon them or I was a therapist for them, but through doing inner guidance work, their memories started to return. And when the memories return, it was trauma for almost all of them, or most of them. So I'm just dealing with many, many years of dealing with people who have gone through this. Once the veil of secrecy is removed from people's experience, it's interesting what comes out for them. And much of it is trauma and uncertainty left then afterwards with the feeling that I don't know what happened to me. I've been harmed in some way, or I've been transgressed in some way. And now, then you start talking about soul retrieval, because now people have lost or disabled their whole sense of themselves. So on record, I think the abductee experience is pretty negative and harmful. And what it leads people to do is often to become advocates for the intervention, and or they're just used for biological purposes. And to me, that's a crime against humanity. Now, if you just have a telepathic communication, that's one thing. But if you're physically taken and messed with, well, now you're violating people's personal space, their rights, and, you know, we set the laws in this world. You can't just come here and operate on a different set of laws. And so if people are violating our laws and our sense of propriety, our physical space, personal space, mental space, that's violation, in my opinion. And I've had to keep many forces out of my mind who wanted access to my mind over these years that I've been dealing with this. And I'm telling you, it's a real thing. And I respect it, and I know that it has tremendous impact on people. So we're not dealing, you have to get really clear, we're not dealing with a good, bad force. This force, if you learn about its activities and its impact on people and really do the on-the-ground work with it, there's a reason that the government is covering it up. And that's because no government's going to admit they're dealing with an adversary for which they have no response or no way to defend people. No government would ever really reveal that. And so that's not the whole picture of government secrecy, certainly. But if you told people the truth about this, the level of societal breakdown, it would be a meltdown. And so you have to be really responsible now in how you're going to communicate to these people gradually over time and acclimate them to a whole different set of features in our environment, having a whole different set of outcomes for us. So I'm being very wise now. I'm not denying disclosure. I'm for disclosure, but I know it will have to be procedural to begin to acclimate people that they're living in the universe now, not just in their own world. They're dealing with forces in the world who are operating behind the scenes, influencing people and governments. So this is a really big thing. You can't just dump that on somebody suddenly. And so responsible disclosure is the real thing. So anyway, I think it's really important that we honor the times in which we live. Human society is breaking down. Other forces are here to take advantage of that. We live on a beautiful planet that's desired by others. And their best opportunity to gain access to it without force is to enter the time of uncertainty and breakdown for us that we've created. I'm not saying they created it. We've created it. And it's probably an evolutionary step that many nations, many cultures, many worlds have had to go through in their developments as a technological society. But how, whatever may be the case, we are living in a time of breakdown and uncertainty and pessimism. So, and we blame each other and we're at each other's throats. The real disclosure is the extraterrestrial disclosure. That's the disclosure we need, and they won't give it to us. So if someone else in the US can give us some of that, that could be helpful to us. It won't revolutionize us, but it will be helpful to us. Because we are naturally oriented to defend ourselves against threats. If you don't recognize a threat that's real, then you're in trouble. So I think the threat narrative is not an easy one to communicate. I know a lot of people don't want to hear it or fight back against it or argue with it on religious or spirituality terms. But if that's the basis of reality in which we're living at this time, then somebody has to speak out for that. And I do that with great love and respect for humanity. I want to see humanity survive. I want to see humanity become a free and self-determined race in the universe. I know we're not able to do that right now, but that is our destiny. But to gain that destiny, we're going to have to make major changes. And they will not be just because we want those changes. They will be forced upon us, in this case by outside forces. Because the positive aspect of this whole intervention is it will force humanity to unite in its own defense.
Telling us that, you know, the NHI have, they're working with the U.S. government, you know, that these NHI factions exist, and that they communicate telepathically. Like, we have a firsthand witness that is telling us this. So I just want to bring that to the conversation.
Yes, I second that, and good to meet you, Jason, in this space, and have this dialogue together. Just before I have to jump off, I want to leap way back to what Ulrich said and do a little Doomer Daddy dance with him on the experts, and I'm not in no way actually disagreeing, really. It's just I want you all to know that the experts are coming. All right, disclosure is likely, whether by the USG, another foreign government, or by the NHI, which means hundreds of millions of living humans are about to crash into this space. And so anyone who thinks they're anyone is going to have something to say in every imaginable field, right? So this is the tsunami wave approaching, probably, unless forces that be, and they do exist, that do not want this to occur, are successful. I'm encouraged that they won't be, but it could end up going that way. But basically, you know, it's coming. And so as a huge chunk of the living human population crashes into this space with its tremendous record and tremendous research and analysis done by so many authors and researchers, they will need to understand the nature of the phenomenon as it has been observed, researched, and as it is taking place. Because there will be many associations, automatic, right in the instantaneous kind of reactive parts of our minds that, wait, maybe this is the coming of Christ. Or wait, maybe these are the ancient aliens that I have seen on History Channel have done this, that, or the other, right? That association will go live. That circuitry will light up. And so I just think it's so important that the UFO community, if it can be called that still, is in a position to serve at that point and help inform the thinking of these many, many people who will not have any history on the phenomenon that has taken place, right? They will not know about abductions. They will not know about a potential hybridization program. That's a problem. So who will inform? Who will at least introduce that into their consideration of what's going on? I think that's going to be really important. And the experts are going to need onboarding. So, you know, but I think this field has to get itself ready for that. I mean, if we're going from like benevolent alien salvation to hair on fire, you know, evil demons from beyond, that's not going to help people in their cognitive process of this event. It's not either of those extremes, right? And so there's a huge risk of accidentally writing the NHI into our religious scriptures, our human origins, or in some other way. And I hate to say it, but I think the NHI would be quite happy with that association because it gives them tremendous power, which they will need at a time when they are speaking in the world in ways that are undeniable, which could very well be coming. And so, you know, this is all highly consequential. That's where I'm coming from. I mean, the inference was made that this is, I'm leading with fear. Do I sound afraid? I'm concerned. I am alarmed. But I am not leading with fear. I'm leading with logical thought. And I'm leading with caution and instinct and responsibility as best I can see to do. Because those are some of my human capabilities. And I think it's really important that many people can bring that full suite on board. And there's no harm in being cautious, right? Fools rush in. If we have to climb in with a non-human intelligence because they're channeling a set of messages that say that we need to unite with their Galactic Federation, is there cause for pause? Is there risk to pausing with that? There's definitely a non-zero risk of climbing in quickly. And so I just don't see enough caution and instinct and responsible logical thinking taking place around me, and that is concerning to me because I know the global public is about to crash into this space. And so how will they interface cognitively with this event and down select from all the many theories, like Patricia mentioned, you know, so many different theories of origin, being, intent, motive, and down select to something that represents a responsible starting assessment that can actually inform human action. Like I'm talking about global treaties, UN governing bodies, bilateral agreements between competing world powers regarding what to do about NHI. So when I say, prove it to me that the Wheel of Ezekiel is talking about the Greys, there's a reason for that, right? Because it's a non-viable assertion in the context of global action and consensus building around this issue. And that may sound very grandiose, like, oh yeah, we're never going to get there. We're going to get there. I'm not saying we're going to succeed, but we're going to get to that line, I think. So thank you so much for the hosts and for the dialogue. And I love that the heat climbed in this room and we're dialoguing and debating. I mean, as humans will, guys. I mean, this is a small little microcosm of what's about to happen on Earth. So, you know, iron your nervous system or your gut, and get ready for differing views to some degree duke it out. And because we have to come to some sort of reasonable position regarding this event. And I unfortunately don't think that's happened in the history of this phenomenon.
I think this conversation is very important. And one of the things I really want to emphasize regarding an unknown phenomenon like this that claims to offer so much and promise so much, and yet is doing so many things behind the scenes that is really reprehensible and dangerous and destructive to people, is you can't want anything from it. And I've said this to many people, even on interviews with my interviewer, and I can tell there's a step back for people because they often want something, some payout from this, some benefit, something we can't give ourselves. Some solution that we can't produce ourselves, some some gift of technology that will make a big difference in the world, or some healing force or healing power that will help to restore humanity. And that narrative is very predominant with Adventees, and for some people, they're totally given to it and believing in it. But I really want to recommend for all of us here, as we're in this kind of chat together, to not want anything from this intervention. Because when you do that, you begin to gain the eyes to see things you couldn't see before. You become open to considering, recognizing things that may not have been apparent before. So your objectivity begins to open up this panorama more thoroughly. And I think this is very, very important. It's actually, it's almost like a discipline. And of course, this also has to do with establishing relationships with people. This kind of objectivity is very rare, rarely practiced, but it's really important. So I would warn against making any deal with this intervention. It is what it is. It does what it does. It hasn't changed. It's not likely to change. Its goals are the same. It considers us an inferior race who's violent and destructive, and can only be managed. Not destroyed, but managed. And that is actually, in my view, that's exactly what the game plan is. And they may in the interim give us a sense of value or meaning or purpose to them, but 80 years demonstrates their intent, their process, and ultimately their objectives. So I really want to share that with you. That's my view. I wish it wasn't my view, because it makes my life more difficult. And I find myself to be a very lone voice out there presenting this information, because it's not what people really want to hear. And some people are very invested in thinking that this intervention is the salvation for humanity, or has things to offer us that we can't provide for ourselves. So I'm going against the grain of public desires and preferences, but I think this truth is based upon the reality of our experience thus far, which should not be neglected and should be revealed as much as can be done without harming people and their privacy. So that's my recommendation. And I know I'm speaking to a group of people who can hear this and not be offended by it. And this objectivity, I think, is really what gives us the ability to use a deeper intelligence within us called knowledge, which has nothing to do with our personal preferences, can see clearly and guide us in matters of great uncertainty, great difficulty, and navigate a changing world with great difficulty and uncertainty. So we have the power to deal with this, but we can't be seduced by it. And likewise, we can't be defeated by it either. So it can't be desire or fear that takes us out of the picture, because what some of you know, what we may know, could have a huge bearing on the outcome for humanity over time, not immediately, but over time. So somebody has to see clearly and look at the evidence and base the assessment on that, and have a very a very logical approach to this rather than a preferential approach. In that way, we can begin to see things that were not apparent to us before. I think we have to understand that no one in the universe is going to come and save us. And anyone who professes to do that is here for their own purposes and their own benefit. So we have to grow up as a race. This is our planet. If we're going to take management of it, maintain management of it, be the stewards of this world, continue to be the stewards, we're going to have to take on that level of accountability and responsibility. What a foreign power can do is demonstrated by the Allies of Humanity, which share this wisdom about life in the universe, how we should consider visitation, how we consider intervention, what we need to know about those forces around us that could be beneficial in the future, and those forces who seek to take advantage of us in our hour of need. So this is just very important, because if we keep looking to the universe for salvation, we are basically inviting intervention, and that intervention, as all interventions seem to prove themselves to be, is for its own benefit and its own success. So this is something I think is, we have to walk around within ourselves. Can human beings, will go through hell in this next century is going to be very tough. It's going to be a lot of collapsing, a lot of reevaluation, a lot of damage, much lost life probably. And I believe we're all here to be a part of that. We were sent into the world to be a part of that, to live this time under these circumstances, and not to be in constant complaint about the way things are. That we were sent into the world at a time of intervention. And those of you who are gathered here have had the burden and the benefit of learning about that already to a certain extent. So this is our time to really make a difference with the things we know and feel and reach out to other people, because this is a power to the people situation. I mean, if people acquiesce to the intervention, there's nothing the government can do, ultimately. The people will elect politicians that support the intervention if they're given to it themselves. And there's a real danger of that. So I really want to emphasize that no one should be messing with us in our world. No foreign presence, no free nation would do that, because they would want to protect our sovereignty and the responsibility that we have to manage this planet and learn to do it successfully under great duress. And we are now facing great duress. We have a failing environment. We have a warming world, and we have competition from the universe around us that you can't negotiate with. They care nothing for us. We're just a workforce to be employed. So don't think that we'll ever be able to manage the world on equal terms with shared authority with this intervening force. That is not possible. That is going against 80 years of showing us just the contrary, that we're being ignored, we're not being recognized, they don't care for our views, they don't want to share power with us. That is so important to know, so I want to add that as well. So this is a time for me that I see it as a time of becoming empowered, becoming responsible, becoming sober about the reality of contact. It's inevitable. As soon as you begin to venture out into space, or in our case, as soon as you begin to degrade your planet, others will come seeking opportunity. And that's just life. You know, life isn't different out there. Some things are different, but survival is survival. And competition is competition. Perhaps war has been controlled to a certain degree in our region of space, which the Allies of Humanities emphasize, but the degree of competition, the search for resources, is incredible, incredibly intense. The powers of persuasion are incredibly intense. So this is the universe we're going to emerge into. It's not a magic kingdom out there. It's not an arena of enlightened races who will welcome us into their fold. I mean, this is not a fairy tale. This is life. And so this is my view, this is how I see things, and it gives me a certain clarity about the situation that I don't think I would have otherwise. I want to take a moment and talk about the description of the AI, the alien presence of the world that's depicted through the Allies of Humanity briefings, who want us to know really the nature of these beings and how they function. So these are a hierarchical trading. They're not nations, they're not worlds, they're intermediaries. They search out planets for opportunities, for resources, and for the prospect of conquest. And they serve larger nations in a vast trading network. And this is all done behind the scenes. It's all done unofficially because forced intervention is not allowed in our part of the universe, which is why we're not facing an armed alien intervention. And we see different kind of phenotypes because there are different levels of participation, and there are more than one group of these organizations. Some people think there's probably six of them, and they have different racial configurations, but they're multiracial. And the grays that we see are basically bred by them, not on our planet, but off planet, to serve in the lowest level of functionality. And the actual leaders of these organizations are never seen by human beings. They're never revealed. And so we know nothing about them. But their goal is their goal. They're not here to make a deal with us. They're not here to negotiate the terms. They're not here to be our assistants, our enablers. They're not here to rescue us, all the things that we might want them to be. And their operation is very uniform and has very clear, succinct goals. And they are playing a long game. So if it takes a century to accomplish this without the use of force, without destroying the planet or humanity as a potential workforce, it will take a century. We don't think in those terms. We don't think in terms of the long game. We think in terms of what can happen in 2 or 3 years from now. And so we're very short-sighted in that regard. So I wanted to bring this forward because you can't negotiate with these beings. They're not going to negotiate with you. Even Philip Corso said this back in the early 70s, you know, they tried to stop human abductions from happening, and the intervention wouldn't stop. There was no way to negotiate with them. They wouldn't keep agreements. They're entirely self-serving. They're in their own plan. We're just the reckless natives that have to be monitored and controlled. So the situation is arguably more simple than we might think it to be. And, of course, people want to make it more confusing. They want to obfuscate it. They want to add other dimensions or possibilities, endless possibilities. But what I'm proposing here is that the situation is not as complex as we think it is. It is an attempt at gaining control of the planet through non-military means by subverting the population and by taking advantage of human conflict and human the degradation of human civilizations in this century. This is the great century of opportunity for intervention. Humanity will reach such a place of desperation, they will look to anyone who can promise them to rescue them from their situation. And who can resist the offer of technology and whatever they can provide, which is all a promise. There's no proof they can provide any of these things, by the way. It's our weakness and our division and our breakdown that makes the intervention much more possible and much more successful than it would be otherwise. So this is my view. It's been well informed for me. I've been living with it for quite a while. It's not my personal views. I never wanted to be a part of this personally. I was chosen to be a part of this, and I'm glad I'm here because I see its vast importance. But I think the situation is just not being evaluated very clearly, and everybody's got their own version, and some people want the extraterrestrials to be a part of whatever happens here, and I'm here to say they need to be driven away. And their attempt to exploit us and turn us against one another and to make us dependent upon them, if that can be at least partially prevented, then they will have to withdraw, because they cannot achieve success here if a sizable part of the human family resists them and recognizes them. So I just want to add that to my commentary. It's not a commentary that's very popular out there, but for me, it holds true with the evidential nature of this. And I think we shouldn't look for anything beneficial from the intervention. It is here for itself. It has its own goals and purposes. We're merely a resource to be used. My heart goes out because I'm a pro-human person, and I see we're being greatly challenged. I think that challenge can make us stronger, make us more united, and maybe even possibly make it capable for us to elevate ourselves to become a free race in the universe. That is my goal. That was the goal of the Allies Humanity Briefings. And we have to earn that freedom. It's not just going to be given to us. We can't assume we have it. And I think that my narrative, though challenging and difficult, I think really is meant to empower us and to give us the opportunity to see how humanity can unite as a world, because we can't go into the universe as a set of warring factions and have any hope of being able to maintain our sovereignty there. So thank you all for being a part of this. I think it's a very valuable conversation. I think the information being displayed here, the different perspectives, is quite important. And I know my wife Patricia would like to say something as well.
Oh, that's wonderful. This has been incredibly healthy to hear the perspectives brought forward here and to have the engagement. The conversation needs to open up, it needs to flow, and people need to be included and not to be sidelined. So I'm so grateful for this opportunity to be here.
I know that we are having a discussion about where we're going to go as a race, and I think that's a very high-level discussion, and we have to look at all the possibilities and be as realistic as we can about what we're facing. And we all have wisdom to share into this space and experience as well, and questions and uncertainty and even anxiety. I mean, we're living in anxious times. This is a time of great anxiety and a time of great change and uncertainty. So I appreciate this opportunity to be with you on this topic that I feel is of the utmost importance.